Chapter 1 Thorne Hickam was no stranger to dodging bullets. In his time, he had rung up so many near collisions with ruination as a deputy sheriff that he often quipped that he joined the army just to improve his chances of staying alive. But through his many near misses with death, he had to admit that Lady Luck had a soft spot for him. Thorne stood just over 6 feet tall, not as tall as some, but a shade taller than most. Somewhat rakish, his ruddy complexion came from years of cowboying that kept him lean, trim, and solidly built. At 180 pounds, his stature intimidated most would-be tough guys. Basically a shy man who didn't talk much, to some he appeared aloof, which belied an easygoing manner. He loved a good joke and enjoyed playing pranks now and then. With sandy brown hair and pale blue eyes, he was considered good-looking, if not handsome. Those men and women with whom he became friends found him welcome company. Thorne puts you in one of only two groups, friends and everybody else, and most belong in the latter. His friends he counted on one hand, and the one man he trusted his life with was C.J. Mason, sheriff for the city of Colson, Montana. They first met each other in their early 20s in the fall of 1890. In Billings at a cowboy contest. Both were accomplished wranglers and fierce competitors, besting each other back and forth in various events. Thorne saw something in Mason that impressed him, a fierce commitment to fair play and decency that was rare even among cowboys, a code of honor that set him apart. It was at that competition that Mason was bucked off a vicious horse and got his boot wedged in the stirrup. As others desperately tried to lasso the wild bronco, Mason fought to free himself or die. Thorne leaped on an idle strawberry roan and chased down the thrashing beast. He sprang on its back and took it to the ground, saving Mason and amazing every buckaroo in the arena. The two became fast friends, sharing meals and drinks, celebrating each other's rodeo triumphs. When it ended, Mason returned to Colson, where he served as a young deputy. Thorne chose to stay in Billings as a wrangler for a large cattle ranch, but the pay was meager and the work brutal. Branding cattle, mending fences, and chasing steers for a living began to lose its charm. He didn't want to end his days old, stove up, and nothing to show for it, and no tales of glory to tell his grandchildren. His thoughts strayed to Colson. One day the door to the Colson Sheriff's Office swung open. Mason was busy sweeping out an empty cell. He looked up and saw Thorne covered in trail dust. "Well, what the hell brings you to paradise?" he asked with a smile. "Just wondered where a fella could get a drink around here," Thorne said. "Well, that all depends," Mason smiled, leaning against his broom. "What do you favor?" "Well, I'll take a beer if it's cold, but if I got a choice, then make it a whiskey." "I know just the place," Mason said. They walked over to the Crystal Palace Saloon on Minnesota Avenue. It was a sizable drinking establishment whose doors never closed and where Jake was not only the bartender, he was part owner and took great pride in stocking the widest selection of spirits west of Bismarck. "Jake," said Mason, "I want you to meet Thorne Hickam." Jake gave him a strong handshake and a welcome nod. Mason continued the introductions. "He's that fellow I told you about that jumped on that Hellcat Bronco and saved my neck." Jake eyed Thorne with a new respect. "Well, we're rather fond of our young Mason here, so your first drink is on the house," Jake declared. "What'll it be?" Thorne scanned the liquor shelf behind the bar. "You carry old Bushmills whiskey?" Thorne asked. Jake wagged his finger at Thorne and gave him a devilish grin. Then he turned to Mason. "This lad's got expensive taste." Then he slapped the bar counter with his open hand so loud it startled the patrons nearby. "I like your style, boy," Jake laughed. "I promised you the first drink was free, and I'm a man of my word." Mason and Thorne made their way over to an empty table and settled in. "Okay," said Mason. "So what really brings you here?" "I just wanted to see how glamorous your job was," Thorne replied. "You look pretty handy with a broom." "Oh, that. The sheriff's out making rounds, and it's the maid's day off." Thorne paused for a moment, then spoke his mind. "Truth is, I'm looking for work," Thorne confessed. "I drew my pay, packed my saddlebag, and lit out. Wondered if you needed an extra hand. Deputy-type work? Mason asked. Thorne just nodded as he took a sip of his old Bushmills whiskey. They finished their drinks and wandered back over to the sheriff's office. Well, I can't speak for the sheriff, Mason explained, but I know he's turned down other fellas. Thorne's eyes wandered over to the bulletin board full of wanted posters. Well, it looks like you could sure use some kind of help, Thorne said, pointing to the wanted posters. Bringing in desperados might be a full-time job. Well, you don't need to be a lawman to do that, Mason said. Ever thought about bounty hunting? Pays pretty good if you don't get your head blown off. Are you serious? Thorne asked. Mason walked over to the posters. There's $2,000 to bring in Kid Curry, $4,000 for Butch Cassidy, and $15,000 for the Dalton Gang, dead or alive. Thorne had never considered a career in bounty hunting, but the reward dollars were pretty enticing. You got anything more in my wheelhouse? Thorne asked. Well, I think we got a $10 reward out for anyone who'll bring in Walt Jenkins to pay his fine for spitting in church, Mason offered. They both laughed. Mason walked over to his desk and sifted through some papers. Okay, here's a job you can handle, Mason said, handing the complaint notice to Thorne. Horace Blunt. He's wanted for busting up the 15th Street Tavern 3 weeks ago and never paying for the damages. Well, how much does he owe? Thorne asked. Mason checked the complaint notice. He threw a chair through the window, smashed up the liquor counter, and ruined a portrait hanging behind the bar, Mason said. The total came to $95, but he refuses to pay. It's either that or jail time. Anyway, somebody's got to bring him in. Well, what's the story? Thorne asked. Well, there's some blame to go around for that little fracas. That particular watering hole brews some pretty deadly drinks, Mason began. Oh, yeah? Like what? Well, they got this thing called a Tanglefoot. It's made out of raw alcohol, burnt sugar, and turpentine, explained Mason. It's supposed to be some kind of whiskey, but it's just pure coffin varnish. Well, what happens if you drink it? Thorne asked. Well, it affects everyone a little different. I've told Harry, the owner, that he's going to get somebody soused on that stuff and he's going to be sorry. So what happened? Asked Thorne. Well, Horace came in a few weeks ago and drank about 3 shots of that rot gut, and everything started to go fuzzy. He was trying to clear his eyes when he fixed his gaze on the portrait of a naked lady lying on a bunch of pillows hanging behind the bar, Mason said. Well, was something wrong with it? Asked Thorne. Well, not to me. But in his condition, old Horace swore that naked lady's face looked just like his sister, and he was morally outraged. He demanded they take that picture down, said Mason. They tried to explain to him that they bought that painting in St. Louis, and it was not his sister. Well, I take it he wasn't satisfied, Thorne concluded. Oh, no, he got pretty worked up. Said if they didn't take it down, he would. By the time it was over, the painting was torn to shreds. The liquor counter was all busted up and a chair went right through the front window. Harry demanded payment for the damages, but Horace drew his gun and backed out the door. No one's seen him since, said Mason. Well, how do you want to play it? Thorne asked. Well, Sheriff Webb had a talk with Harry. Told him as long as he served that red lightning, he could just figure property damage was part of the cost of doing business. But for the sake of goodwill, we need to bring Horace in to pay half. Well, what's the bounty on him? Thorne asked. Sheriff posted a $25 reward, said Mason. $25? Thorne frowned. Well, he ain't exactly Blackjack Ketchum, Mason replied. Just go get him. He's got a little spread west of town. Thorne rode out to the Blunt Ranch, such as it was. The main gate was assembled from assorted fallen tree branches. A weed-lined dirt road led to the house, a modest, single-story, clapboard structure with a front porch, stone chimney, water trough, and hitching post. A small barn nearby was in need of attention, and the corral was sad and empty. A dozen cattle grazed in the field behind the house. Thorne approached the house slowly, not sure what kind of reception he might receive. A loud voice bellowed through the window. That's far enough! Thorne reined in his horse and waited for Horace to make the next move. Who are you and what do you want? Horace hollered. Thorne Hickam. I come to collect a debt, that's all. You the law? Horace called back. No, sir. Everybody just figured it'd be less hostile if an outside third party could work out a settlement, Thorne said. I don't owe anybody anything, Horace hollered from inside. Look, I'm going to get off my horse and tie it off and get out of the sun. Why don't you come out on the front porch and let's figure out what's fair? Thorn hollered. I'm going to drop my gun right here. He waited for a reply. Hearing none, he unbuckled his gun belt and dropped it to the ground. Then he slowly dismounted and walked his horse up to the hitching post, tied it off, then slowly sat down on the front porch step with his back to the door. He waited, and he waited, and he waited. 30 minutes later, the front door slowly opened and Horace walked out. He was in his 30s, unshaved, hair mussed up, wearing overalls and heavy boots. He said nothing, just stood behind Thorne. You got a nice little ranch here, Thorne said. You got the makings of something special. A place to call your own and a town full of folks to share your life with. That's more than I got. Still no words from Horace. Thorne pointed to the corral. I could imagine some horses in that corral. Hay stored in the barn. Some cattle in the field. I used to work on a ranch. I always thought I'd like to start my own place. Kind of like this.
It ain't easy, Horace muttered.
Well, of course not, Thorne answered. Nothing worth anything is. But it ain't out of reach. You've made a good start. You gonna throw it all away now?
No,
Horace snorted. Well, that's what you're fixing to do. You busted up somebody else's business. His dream. You gotta make it right.
I ain't got the money, Horace said.
You bring in one of your steers, it'll fetch $50. That'll settle you up. Horace let that idea play around in his mind. Thorne went on to sweeten the deal. I'm getting paid $25 to bring you in. You do this thing and I'll split the $25 with you. And then I'll come back here next week and help you get your corral back on its feet.
Why would you do that? Horace asked.
I don't know. You and I might be neighbors one day. I might just need a favor from you. I help you now and one day you help me. That's how it works. What do you say? The two rode into town with a steer in tow. As they rode past the sheriff's office, Simon Webb and Deputy Mason stepped out onto the boardwalk to witness this creative resolution. Thorne glanced over and tipped his hat, a Stetson with a classic Montana crease in the crown. Webb raised his coffee mug in reply. You keep that up and I may just have to find a use for you. Come on back here when you're done, Webb called out.